Please be seated. Jesus said, I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. If you were to read through the Gospels and their accounts of Jesus' life and ministry on earth, you would read many of the stories so many of us have come to know and love. You would read about Jesus' birth and incarnation in Bethlehem when there was no room in the inn. You would read about Jesus' own baptism in the River Jordan, his healing of those who were previously impossible to heal, and even the story of bringing his friend Lazarus back from the dead. You would read about Jesus offending and angering the authorities, all while feeding thousands from 5 loaves and 2 fish and teaching his followers how to pray. You would read all of these things and more. You would not read except for one small story in the Gospel of Luke about Jesus' childhood or teenage years. There have been countless articles and scholarship, as well as some humorous writing done about what this time could have been like in Jesus' life and what he would have done. But the point is, we don't know. So I have my own questions. For instance, I wonder if Jesus' mother was anything at all like mine. Was he repeatedly taught what was appropriate at the dinner table and what was not, and then reminded every single time that he went to a friend's house to mind his manners? I have to believe so. And so in my scholarship of Jesus' teenage years, and with this passage from the Gospel of John before us, I have to ask, why did Jesus take off his shoes at the dinner table? Maundy Thursday is given its name from the Latin for new commandment, Mandatum Novum. It is the day that the church commemorates and retells of the institution of the Lord's Supper and Jesus' new commandment that as he has loved us, so we too shall love one another. Jesus' own demonstration of how to fulfill this commandment began with his feet, which carried him throughout his ministry on earth and what we now know as the Holy Land, in order that he might share God's love with the people around him. A couple of years ago, I went on a pilgrimage to the Holy Land and traveled throughout most of the country of Israel. From the southern deserts and flatlands by the Dead Sea to the northern, more mountainous regions by the Sea of Galilee, this land and the area that it spans covers every bit of the climatological and topographical spectrum. And here we were, riding in our luxurious tour bus, going from city to city, holy site to holy site. And on our way from Nazareth to Cana, it hit me. Jesus walked here. His feet, possibly bare, though also possibly in some minimalist sandal-type shoe, were on this very ground. I'd already sort of managed to get it in my head that Jesus was physically present in this land at one point, to the extent that you can do that. But it was the realization that he walked here that struck me this time. This ground is rocky. There are major hills, if not mountains, and that doesn't even take into account the enormous distances that we wouldn't think of walking today. And this is just from one city to another, which really aren't all that far apart by driving. This is and was not easy, yet this is how Jesus showed and shared the love of God with the world. In moving from town to town and village to village on foot, Jesus healed, Jesus fed, he raised and ultimately loved those who were on the margins, those who previously had not been loved and society said should not be. In order to know this land and what happened on it for ourselves, we had to get out of the comforts of our bus and touch and see what made the Holy Land holy. We had to physically connect with it, to expose ourselves to it, in order to, in some way, build a relationship with it. Some of you may have read the book Born to Run by Christopher McDougall. It documents the life of a tribe in Mexico called the Tarahumara, who have an incredible ability to run extremely long distances. These people have not had and do not have hardly any contact with the outside world out of their tribe and the mountains on which they live and work and play. They run everywhere they go, and they are known to have wild parties that center around extremely long races up and down mountains. And they do it all with bare feet. The most amazing thing about these people is not just that they can run even hundreds of miles in bare feet, but that in doing all of this on mountains, they experience extremely low rates of injury. There are no stress fractures, there is no tendonitis, there is no such thing as hurt knees or ankles or backs or many of the other injuries we in the United States have come to know of as facts of life when running. And it is precisely because they are without their shoes that they are not hurt and do not experience many of the issues that those of us who run with shoes do experience. Our high-tech, lightweight, ultra-fast shoes have begun to function like casts on a broken bone. Those of you who have had a broken bone or know somebody who have seen what the arm or ankle or wrist looks like after it comes out of the cast. Muscles have grown weak, the bone even appears smaller. The tendons, too, are weak as they have not been used in the last several weeks. That which has been encased and protected from the outside still must at some point be freed from that cast in order to interact with the world around it and to become fully healthy and alive again. It is those things that are intended to protect us and sometimes do that in fact can also hinder us. So it is with our spiritual lives too. And we must loosen ourselves from the grips of what we think protects us or comforts us so that we may become fully alive and enliven the world around us by becoming more fully connected with it. Many doctors spent many hours studying this tribe and trying to figure out not only why they weren't sustaining these injuries, but also how their bare feet seemingly played a major role in that. One reason, they say, is that our feet are one of the only places on our bodies where the concentration of nerves is as high as it is. There are very few, if any, other places on our body like this. Because of this, our feet have an incredible ability to read the environment around it and adjust to the sensation that they feel. So in running barefoot, our feet can adjust from improper form and striking of the ground to the proper placement of the foot on the ground, not only to achieve our most efficient running, but also to do so in the least harmful way. Our shoes prevent our feet from being able to do this. It seems, based on their studies, our feet, and in fact every part of our bodies affected by running, are better off without the very things that we have created to protect them. Dr. Paul Brand, who's the chief of rehab at a hospital in Louisiana, the U.S. Public Health Service Hospital, studied this trial. And he says, the barefoot walker receives a continuous stream of information about the ground and about his own relationship to it, while a shod foot sleeps inside an unchanging environment. Our ability to love as Christ has loved us, to fulfill this new commandment we have been given, suffers in much the same way. We build up the things that make us comfortable and hide behind and within those things that we think protect us. But instead, they cut us off from a full interaction and relationship with the world around us. It is the love and grace of God received in many ways, but especially the Lord's Supper, that carries us and sustains us out of this in order that we may more fully love the world, that we may love it as Christ loved it. So back to the first question I asked. Why did Jesus take off his shoes at the dinner table? In doing so, Jesus physically showed his disciples and us the two things that carried him and his love throughout that land. His almost bare feet, not shielded from the outside world, kept him in relationship with not only the ground, but also the people who lived there and their needs. On Maundy Thursday, we are given the two of the very things that carry us, the bread and the wine, the body and the blood, to show Christ's love throughout the world. We are called then to strip away whatever may hinder us from doing that, that we may expose the love of Christ, such that our lives and our communities and the world can't help but be transformed by it. Amen.